Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Mighty Mighty Boss Zones podcast, episode number 5 for the week of, or should I say the weekend of, as been the custom on this show, the weekend of August 22nd, 2020. I am your mini boss, Alex Rigsby, alongside Chelsea Alberta.
Hello.
Brian Taylor.
Hey.
And making his first appearance since episode number 1, Mr. Will Coleman.
I'm back.
He's back. We're glad you're back, Will. We assume you've made tons of smoothies since the last time you were here. We missed you.
I did my time.
He did his time. He did his time. And we're about to have one heck of a time, ladies and gentlemen, because this is the Mighty Mighty Boss Zones. Each and every week, we talk about the video game news that you maybe already know about, but we give it like a tiny little spin or whatever, and then we talk about stuff, and everyone laughs. Good times are had by all. But that being said, we're just going to jump right into it this week, and I'm going to go this week to Mr. Brian Taylor. What have you been up to?
Hey, so I actually started my new game jam. We talked about me finishing the Game Boy one, and I started a new game jam where I am making a Metroid game. And we actually have our guest from the last couple of weeks, Isaac, who is helping me with the programming on it.
Oh, that's awesome. And glad that y'all are able to work together. That's cool.
Yeah, it's been pretty challenging so far because I'm using a new game engine called Godot, and I came from Unity, and I'm sort of working my way through this new video game engine and trying to figure the ins and outs of it, but I like it so far. It's been fun working with.
Oh, I thought there was going to be... You ended with a contraction. How dare you? I was like, with what?
I'm contractually obligated to do that.
Hey, did anyone see the Nintendo joined the podcast?
Nintendo joined the chat? Oh, no.
Yeah, I think they're issuing a cease and desist against Brian.
Oh, no.
Yeah, can't make Metroid games, man.
Nope.
Well, it's a good thing I'm making a Metroidvania, then.
That's true. Ooh, he's only making a Vania. He's not making a Metroid.
Yeah. Capital V for Vania.
Yes. V for Vendetta.
Other than that, I mean, I'm guessing you want me to talk about what I've been playing or whatever.
Sure.
Sort of been a little bit hodgepodge here and there. One of the games that recently was released on the Switch, and we'll talk about a little bit later, A Short Hike, I've been playing on the Switch, and that's cool. A lot of fun. Sort of indie darling that has like a aesthetic that reminds me a lot of Phantom Hourglass, and sort of like a PlayStation 1 graphic aesthetic to it, but it's a lot of fun. Sort of cheeky, the dialogue and stuff between the characters. It's a bunch of animals running around this island, and it's neat. It's not too much of a cerebral game. It's literally a short game. I think you can finish in a couple hours, and I'm sure there's people that are speedrunning it because it's likely not that difficult to finish, but I've been playing that, and then if you want me to go into the other game that is one of our topics, I can wait if you want me to, or I can talk about it now.
I'm not sure which one that would be. Yeah, go for it. Okay. Yeah.
I would love to gush about it. So No Straight Roads is a game that I'm going to be reviewing for one of the websites I write for, Big Boss Battle. And it is a action beat-em-up game that is based in music and has a very Jet Set Radio vibe to it. The entire aesthetic is very neon, and you play as these two characters, Zeke and May, and they have this rock outfit called the Bunk Bed Junction, I believe is what the name of their band is. And so this entire city is, there's this corporation called NSR, and they sort of have this EDM is fueling like all the electricity and stuff that's running through the city, and it's powered by music, and they basically have this huge corporation that has like a game show that tries to get bands to come in and be part of their network, and May and Zico in there and try to perform and become the winners of that competition, and they get rejected, and they're pretty much told there's no place for rock in this world or in this city or whatever, and that sort of fuels the idea of them going and trying to take down this corporation that's sort of has a monopoly over all this energy and basically says there's only room for EDM and no rock. But like the biggest thing about this game is it feels like it could have been a harmonics game. Like it's so ingrained with the rhythm, like the enemies move on the beat, your characters play or they attack and do different like abilities and stuff on beat and everything like that. It's just, yeah, it reminds me of like Rez meets Jet Set Radio. And it's got boss fights, and all the bosses are sort of have like their own deal. But my favorite one was there's this one that it's a direct rip off of I don't know her full name. Miku, who am I thinking of with blue hair?
Miku.
Yeah. It's a direct rip off of her, and it's like it basically says in the game, she's not real, so the only way you can attack her is to attack the people behind her. And so it shows like these scenes of these the artist, the programmer, the mocap guy, and like all these people behind the scenes, and you're actually like directly attacking them to sort of take her down, because obviously if there's nobody to run her performance, then she can't perform. And I just thought it was like a neat quirk that they were able to do that sort of as a boss fight. And it's really funny because they have like this punk aesthetic to it where May is like always causing trouble and always being boisterous. And like, I don't know. It's a really fun game. I've been having a lot of fun with it. And it comes out this week, I believe. So not too long to wait for it. I believe it's on every platform. I know it's cool. Coming out for the Switch, so.
Well, then I will definitely play it, because, you know, I just love me them Switch games. I got a whole wall full of them right now. None of them have been opened or played with, but, you know, I mean, they're there. So I should say I'll own it. I don't know that I'll play it.
Oh, you'll own it.
The collector.
Yes. No, I'm just kidding. It sounds really cool. That's awesome, and I'm glad you got to give that little sneak peek. Are you allowed to talk about that? You're not under any embargoes or anything, are you?
Well, I am. I'm only allowed to talk about it up to the second boss, and that's what I was referring to.
Okay, so cool.
I even talked to my editor just to make sure that I wasn't overstepping any boundaries, but he said, yeah, as long as it follows the same rules whether you're on a podcast or writing about it, so.
Okay, cool. Well, I'm glad you can bring this exclusive content to the show. We appreciate it. That's awesome. Okay. Well, so anything else you've been playing or checking out?
Not really. I'm excited that the Game Boy Studio 2.0 update dropped today, and that included platforming and top-down shooters and just a whole bunch of stuff. There's like you can make point and click games with it for whatever reason, so there's just like a whole bunch of stuff. I only got a chance like literally 2 minutes before we were supposed to start recording this. I hopped onto it just to check out the demo and see what they had, but they have a scene in it that reminds me a lot of Link's Awakening when you go underground to face the Goombas and you can like jump on their heads and stuff. Uh-huh. It's very reminiscent of that. It has like a whole ladder system and stuff like that that you can do. But them expanding that engine, which I already think is a marvel in and of itself, has gotten me really excited to develop more games with it. Not to mention it completely solves the color problem that now it supports full palettes for Game Boy Color.
Sure.
So you can make a full color game. Well, not full color, but you know, you're limited to the palette, but
yeah,
you can make it a more colorful game. You're not stuck to the three colors in the Game Boy, which is nice.
Yeah.
Three or four colors, depending on whether you're working in the background or not. But
right. No, that's really cool. Yeah, I would be interested in dabbling and making a platformer or a top-down shooter or something. I think either of those would be really cool to mess around with. Those are, if I had to make a retro game, I think those would be two that I would probably be interested in, just mainly because a lot of those are, you know, you don't necessarily need to be a great writer in order to make, you know.
Yeah, not to mention the scripting on it is like very brain dead easy to do. It doesn't require coding at all. It literally is, you pull down a menu and say, I want this to do that. It's not, yeah. It's like a visual scripting. It's not literally typing in, you know, go to if else, all that stuff. It basically does the same thing, but it's a lot easier to manage. So.
Okay.
Probably very the best cool game engine I've seen that gives you those kind of tools with that kind of freedom to sort of make what you want to.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, that's really cool. Okay. Well, so, Will, it's been a while since we've heard from you. What have you been up to?
Fall Guys.
Fall Guys.
Fall Guys every day.
Really? Have you played it every day?
I play Fall Guys every day.
Have okay.
You won well, yet? Well, almost every day, to be honest.
Well, tell us about Fall Guys.
You know, just seeking that crown, that first cheddar place. It's a chase, you know. You never get it, but it's always there, teases sure you. So
you never won a match.
Listen, there's 60 players each match, so I'm doing my best. I've gotten second.
Yeah, I think that's the highest I've gotten is like second. Well, I haven't won one either, but it's fun to play. Like it really is. It feels like what was that? Wipeout?
It reminds
me a lot of the show Wipeout.
Well, so
we talked about it in a previous episode, but
well, yeah, so
Ball Slot means Wipeout.
Yeah, and you know, we did talk about it a little bit for people who don't know what Fall Guys is, you guys want to kind of just describe it briefly?
I'll let Will do it since he's the one that led with it.
Okay,
sure, he definitely said it's definitely Wipeout and Human Fall Flat. Like that's almost perfect description to a T. It's got like the physics of Human Fall Flat or those types of games. And I mean, it's a battle royale, which typically would steer me away, but it's very simple, easy to pick up. And they're continually, it seems like the developers are continually kind of like chiming in and putting updates out and adding game modes and listening to what the fans want. So that's kind of a positive thing to see.
They just got to get rid of that yellow team, right?
Yes.
Did you hear about that, Will?
No, what?
So there was a tweet that the Fall Guys Twitter account put out that basically they said that like one of their developers had kind of like made a joke about how he could just delete the yellow team at any time. And so then the Fall Guys Twitter account was like, hey, you know, if this tweet gets a million retweets, we'll delete the yellow team. And so then it started getting a lot of traction. They were like, hey, we were just kidding. But like, actually, if like a million retweets would be like the 19th most retweeted tweet in history. So actually, yes, if y'all manage to do this, we will delete the yellow team.
Like permanently from all games?
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
I don't know if
they're going to change it to the orange team. That's all they're going to do. They're just going to change the color.
Definitely.
Or like green or something. Yeah, it'll just be That's entertaining.
Wasn't that the color of the team that everybody hated on in Pokemon Go? Was the yellow?
Pretty much, which I think was Chelsea's team.
Team Instinct.
Impact, right? What is it?
Instinct.
Instinct. Instinct. Instinct. Yeah.
Is that your team too, Will?
No,
you're Valor. That's right, you're Valor. Valor. Okay.
Yeah, I was Valor also.
Nice. Yeah, I still play Pokemon Go every once in a while. Yeah. Well.
That's all right. I'm sad about not being a meathead.
Right. Yeah, I still play Pokemon Go pretty decent amount recently, especially since they've added the ability to do raids remotely and stuff. I feel like that has been a pretty cool addition.
For sure.
Yeah. So have you been playing Pokemon Go any, Will?
Well, truthfully, no, because I updated my iPhone to the beta and it stopped allowing Pokemon Go to work. So I'll have to wait till September. A worthy sacrifice, I think.
Oh, but do you have like a beta OS on your phone now?
Right, yeah. So most apps work. Pokemon Go does not, unfortunately.
How are you going to Pokemon Go to the polls?
True.
Shut up. That's not a thing. Don't make... God. That's terrible.
Yeah, please don't give Joe Biden any catchy, not catchy video gamey things to say. Oh, God. If he did, it would be something Fall Guys related, though, wouldn't it? It'd be like...
Don't fall into Trump's trap.
I won't be the fall guy for this administration.
You cannot pin these accusations on me.
Terrible.
Join me in my ever standing platform.
Yes. Yeah. Joe Biden definitely jumps through that middle fan every single time.
Hey, I'm a middle fan guy. I don't even care if it like slings me as far as it can.
You're just there for the ride.
It's fun. Yeah, no, it's fun.
Just like Biden,
I still make it through. Eventually.
That's noble. You know, I'm afraid of that, but I appreciate the courage that you showcase in the arena.
I'm not a griefer, though. Those people drive me crazy.
What, like what, the people that grab?
Yeah, the people that just stand up at the finish line and grab you.
That's like, get off of me. You grab. That's when you grab.
Yeah.
Right when all the hope's right there.
But I don't like the grab feature in that game. I feel like it should let you climb in some aspects, and it doesn't. It works half the time. There's some shortcuts that you should be able to do, and you can't because it like you grab the wall and you go to climb up, and it's just like, eh. It just doesn't work. I don't know why.
Yeah, it's scripted to work only in the like I think one stage that it's needed for.
Right.
But I don't know. But yeah, I got the I almost got the hot dog costume, so
there you go.
That's like the Infinity Gauntlet of Fall Guys.
A wiener is you very soon.
Boo.
See, this is the laughter that Alex was prescribing.
The doctor's orders. Alex is a lawyer doctor.
Clearly.
What? What was that? I left. I don't.
The Mighty Mighty Boss Zones without Alex.
I wasn't listening. I wasn't laughing either. Boo.
He was maintaining his dungeon.
That's the opposite of what you said.
Or is it?
Live, laugh, love.
Yes. With the most basic
and
of...
fall off a platform with Fall Guys.
Yes. Yes. So what else has been going on, Will?
You know, I've been keeping up or trying to keep up with the epic
with the Kardashians.
Apple thing. Oh. No. Never with the Kardashians. That should be the last time you mention that on this podcast. Strike one out. Strike one, Brian.
But, so you know, keeping up with the Apple thing.
Yeah, that is just entertaining. I mean, you know, it's been kind of like a week now, right? But gosh,
yeah,
get
now
the popcorn,
like,
boys and
going
girls.
Going for the jugular.
Yeah.
Like, we have verifiable proof that you said you only care about your own company.
And then they're like, we're trying to do this for all the companies. I'm like, I don't
every
know.
Company you get.
Spotify, they're kind of tagging along. We'll bring them in too.
Yeah, like, boy, that but... that situation's a whole
silly mega corpse.
Yeah.
Next podcast, Alex, you can tell us all about antitrust laws.
Yes. I mean, I won't because I don't know anything about them.
And Double Jeopardy.
I will lie and, make up stuff.
Not a good strategy for Double Jeopardy.
Hey, isn't that what lawyers typically do?
That is exactly what we do. I'm just going to make up everything. Antitrust was invented in 1922 by a mollusk.
We're going to change your name to Adam because you make up everything.
Adam makes up the whole world in his hands.
And ruins it.
And ruins it.
Are we singing Bible songs now?
Bible songs with Alex Rigsby and the Mighty Mighty Boss songs.
Is there a meter that you can make that like keeps track of how off topic we get and then like see if we can break
the record?
Just
don't put it on me because I'm the one that's like
put
on the other side of the
me.
Planet sometimes. Depending on how far he lets me go. He just like sits there for 4 minutes and waits for until I start talking about like penguin costumes and stuff.
I thought you meant literally. I was like, have you been recording these episodes from like other countries or?
Si, senor.
He sends me across the world to do the research and then.
Guten Tag.
Guten Tag, indeed. Okay. So, Chels, how about you?
Does Google Classroom count as a video game?
Yes.
Because that's what I've been doing.
If the game is life.
Yeah, have you been having fun doing it?
No.
Then yes. Then yes, it's definitely a video game.
It's definitely a video game.
Absolutely.
It's the Dark Souls of Google products.
Yes.
No, I've just been having to get ready to teach next week, so I've been learning how to remote. But as far as actual video games, I am continuing to play Stardew Valley. And I have a new goal now. My goal is to make all of the townspeople just like me as much as they possibly can. They have little heart meters. You can fill up all the way. And that's my goal now.
You know, I don't know much about this universe, but I want to say that polygamy is probably a crime there too, Chels. So I don't know how much you want them to like you.
I'm not dating any of them. They will all adore me.
Yet.
And then the ones that are single, one of them has already confessed their love for my character. Not the one I was going for, but whatever. And
was this after the wine festival or before?
But I can just ignore them. Because if I don't give them a special bouquet item, then we're not dating.
Yeah, that sounds like real life. Real life, which is the same. They're the same.
And it's great because the more you befriend people, the more different recipes you get. So while I'm like doing the collectathon thing of, you know, in-game NPC relationships, I'm also doing the collectathon thing of gaining all of the recipes in the game.
I just wanted to input the idea of a promise bouquet is really hilarious to me.
This is basically what it is. Once one of the characters like had enough hearts that they, you know, in game theoretically would have wanted to date me, I got a letter in the mail saying, or it was advertisement being like, "Hello, do you have someone special in your life that you wish to ask to go steady? Why not buy one of Pierre's great bouquets for them?" And then I could now I have access. I can go purchase a bouquet and give it to someone. The person that professed their love to me did it via Ouija board, which is not something I would have expected. Very creative. I like that.
Well, I mean, doesn't that throw off like their whole system of belief if they, unless they were like having someone from beyond the grave, like profess their love for you or send the message? Like, doesn't that throw off their whole system of belief to, like, misuse a Ouija board like that?
I mean, Ouija boards have been proven again and again to conveniently move where the people holding it expected to move.
Yes.
And so, Luigi boards.
Right.
So, you know, if that character was like, gee, I really like this person, and they were holding on to the little thing on the Ouija board, and the Ouija board started moving around and was like, I love, and then it started to spell out my character's name, and then the next in-game text was like, whoops, the Ouija board has been knocked over. Goodbye.
As someone who has played every Mario Bros. Game since Mario Bros. 2 / USA, I know for a fact that the Luigi board does not move where you want him to go. He purposefully is the slipperiest character in all of those games. And he's bad. Luigi is bad. New Super Luigi U should be burned in a pyre somewhere.
Lame.
Ow. Controversial topic today's podcast.
That's right. That could be our controversial topic. Luigi is bad.
But we know that that's true.
No, guys, come on.
He had a whole year.
Mario Kart.
He had a whole year.
He's like a bad dude.
He's a
bad boy. He's got a stare.
He's a bad boy.
He just knows it's serious.
Starts playing Billie Eilish, bad guy.
Yeah. You know, there was that whole thing where they tried to measure Luigi's bulge through the tennis shorts.
Oh, yeah. That was a nice controversy.
Yeah. That was weird. People get really far into Nintendo characters. And
yeah, like Mario's nipples.
Yeah, yeah.
That was
exactly like
that
Mario's
was a fun
nipples.
Time.
Yeah,
in the history
things I never
of the
would
internet.
Have thought to care about.
Yeah,
I want us to turn around. I want us to turn this vehicle around. Please stop at Mario's nipples.
Okay, Toad's nipples. Does are they behind
stop,
that?
Not go over.
Are they
the
behind
cliff.
That little blue vest? Are they pepperoni nipples? Are they?
Mushroom.
So yes.
No, mushrooms don't have nipples.
He's a pizza.
It's just little mushrooms.
Pizzas don't have nipples either.
No, this is terrible.
Pizza nipples.
Maybe not the pizzas you're ordering.
This
damn right, not the
this
pizzas
episode,
I'm ordering.
This episode is officially
brought to you by Papa John's.
This
Eat fresh.
Yes. This episode's officially titled Pizza Nipples. no matter what happens from this point. Okay. So other than pizza nipples, what have you been playing, Chels? I mean Stardew Valley, whatever.
So to say I've been playing a game called Pizza Nipples.
Okay.
I've really only been playing Stardew Valley because, like I told you guys, the rest of my time has been taken up by playing the worst game ever, which is Google Classroom and all of the district-wide things that they're trying to combine with it.
Right.
I have to link like 4 different accounts to Google Classroom. So.
Hmm. That sounds like the type of game that Isaac would play. Maybe we should get him on and
It's one of those very tedious games. And it's
Is
one
it
of
available
puzzles.
On GameFly?
It's
like
it's,
can I
it's
rent
free
it?
It's free to play. You just go to google.com. It's one of those
do
super
I,
tedious.
Do I have to be a teacher to play it?
I mean, I've set up a Google Classroom from my personal Gmail account before, actually. So
I can impersonate
in
a teacher
reality,
and ruin somebody's education.
I mean, you wouldn't have access to all of their emails and stuff. The
you
way
you wouldn't download a classroom, would you?
That's actually the entire intention of this coming year. That's the idea. Pirating education.
Anti-piracy PSAs. Where are we going with this?
Anti-trust.
Help, Brian.
But yeah, no. The setting that stuff up actually does feel a lot like one of those tedious puzzle games where if you mess something up, you then have to go and undo or redo like 10 different steps you had taken before that to get back to the part that you messed up before.
Like Super Mario Maker.
Yeah. So.
Exactly like Super Mario Maker.
Let's go back to school.
I wonder if Mario wears a mask, does it not make a proper seal because of his mustache?
That is correct.
Okay.
Is he kissed by a rose on the grave?
Probably.
I mean, I suppose he could, like, it looks like his mushroom isn't, like, attached to his skin all the way out, so he could probably tuck in the ends and then be good to go.
True. True.
The important questions are being asked tonight.
Right.
They really are.
The anatomy of Mario.
Do Mario's nipples have microscopic mustaches below them?
I mean, I think Mario's supposed to be a person, so we could ask.
I think they have an icon of World 1-1 from Super Mario Brothers tattooed there. Hmm.
That's fair.
That is World 1-1.
Hey, Alex, what have you been playing?
So I have been playing a few things, one of which is I've been playing Beautiful Joe for the Nintendo GameCube.
That's fun. That's a fun
yeah,
game.
Yeah. I am at World 5, and that game is really hard.
It is very difficult. I mean, that was pre-Bayonetta, right? Yeah, I guess it would have had to been, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where
the Bayonetta got its difficulty was from Beautiful Joe.
Right. And it's a weird game too. Obviously, it's you know, weird because it's Kamiya, but like it's weird because it's hard to go back to some of those GameCube games because they aren't designed with some of the accessibility features that modern games have. So like you go back and you go into the options of GameCube games and it's just like, hey, you want to turn the music up or down, and that's it. That's your entire options list. Or you want to turn rumble on or off, and that's it. And it's like, okay, but like, where are the subtitles? Because a lot of the dialogue in Kamiya games is just like ridiculous nonsense that doesn't make any sense. And just like villains saying like weird things and stumbling over their words like Rick and Morty characters, basically.
If you don't have your TV volume at 100%, are you really playing Beautiful Joe, though?
Apparently not. And that's kind of what I've had to do when playing Beautiful Joe, is just crank the TV volume as high as possible to even attempt to understand what anyone is saying. Like, luckily, Joe's voice is, like, high-pitched and, like, clear enough that I can understand what he's saying, but then it goes back to like the big shark man that he's fighting, and he's just like, and then Joe's like, huh, I guess you're right, so anyway, let's fight. And it's like, okay, am I actually getting anything out of this game? Like, I understand it's not like a super crazy, highly cerebral story or anything, but like, yeah, the gameplay is fun, but like, I'm not getting anything out of the story because I have no idea what's going on other than just like he's fighting a bunch of random dudes.
Are you supposed to be able to understand them, or is it like Charlie Brown where you only get to understand the main characters?
No, they're saying actual words. It's just super slurred, and like depending on which person you're fighting, and it seems like they were not recorded. Like the English voiceovers were not recorded well either. So, I don't know. I'm having a lot of fun playing it, but the dialogue is definitely not the reason why I'm having fun playing Beautiful Joe. But I really do. I love the aesthetic of that world and that series, so I have really always wanted to beat Beautiful Joe, so I'm trying really hard to get through it. And then I also have Beautiful Joe 2 that I'm going to try and play after that. And then other than Red Hot Rumble, which was like the fighting game in that series, there really aren't any other Beautiful Joe games. So, you know, I could play through that whole series pretty quickly.
If you can beat it.
Sure. And that is a big if, but you know, I mean, I'll try to, I'm trying, you know, it's a hard game, but we'll see. I'm sure I'll get there, but, then I also started playing, and I don't know how far I'll actually get into it because it's kind of kind of a weird game, but I've been playing BS, The Legend of Zelda, The Ancient Stone Tablets.
That sounds like a lot of BS to me.
Yeah, it is. And it is a BS Satellaview game for the Super Famicom that was somehow ripped, you know, from, I'm guessing, one of the old Satellaview blank cartridges. Someone ripped the ROM file from there, and all four episodes of The Legend of Zelda, The Stone Tablets, have been archived on the internet, and then someone actually went through the process of translating those into English. So there is like a whole Zelda game out there that you've probably never played, especially if you were living outside of Japan in the 90s, which I obviously was.
I know I was.
Yeah. So like I went back and started playing it, and it's really weird. It's this, you start the game off choosing your gender. So you do not play as Link. You play as a random boy NPC or a random girl NPC. And then you kind of just do like these episodic kind of quests rather than having an actual cohesive story. It's just like, oh, go get your sword from this thing. It kind of almost seems like a Master Quest version of A Link to the Past, except just no story. Just kind of like do these random things in the world of A Link to the Past. Like, you don't even start out with a sword. You have a bee in a bottle that is your weapon that like follows you around until you get
it. Rub it the right way.
Exactly. A bee in the bottle, rub it the right way. And you have to do that until you can get the sword, and your bee just follows you around and attacks people. But it's a weird game. But I was curious to go and play some of those Satellaview games. And so I cranked that up, and it's a weird one. It's one that I would definitely recommend checking out if you're a Zelda fan.
A lot of text, man, from what I'm looking at. There's a lot of text in this game.
There is.
But I like how the bee thing works. That's pretty cool. How it sort of follows you around and attacks things for you and whatnot.
Yeah, well, and the good thing is that the text, the only reason that there's so much text on the screen is because they had to find a solution. Because during those Satellaview broadcasts, there would be someone who would be live, like saying things, like actually saying things. And instead, to like give you hints as to what to do. And instead of that, they gave you a text solution in English that just kind of appears at the bottom of the screen there, you know, on top of the actual, you know, regular in-game dialogue when you're talking to NPCs and stuff. But it's a weird game, but it's definitely...
Yeah, Radical Dreamers was that way. The in-between between Chrono Trigger and Chrono Cross. I remember a lot of... It was really strange how they handled that like text-based stuff that they did on top of that, but a lot of people liked that series. I never played it. I watched it on YouTube.
Okay.
I never actually went around and played it, but for the most part, I mean, since it's a broadcast, it's just as simple just to watch somebody else play it as it is to do it. But no, I mean, for a Zelda game, though, that changes it, I think. I think it's definitely more dynamic that way, but for the most part, yeah. Radical Dreamers was just a like a story to watch for the most part.
Absolutely. It's just really cool to see that someone preserved a lot of that Satellaview stuff and to play some of it, because, you know, otherwise it would be lost to history, like what a lot of the Satellaview stuff is, unfortunately. I think only like half of the broadcasts from the Satellaview actually got archived, and a lot of them are just kind of, you know, maybe they exist out there on like a random Satellaview cartridge that someone hasn't unearthed yet, but you know, so many of those things are lost. So it is really cool that not only that you can go and play some of those in Japanese, but that someone went through the process of translating them is super cool. So yeah, that's what I've been doing. Just a lot of playing retro stuff. I haven't been playing a lot of new stuff. Chelsea and I are still, kind of in the process of moving. We've moved everything into here, but we have some additional stuff that we're going to be getting from my parents' place. And that's going to take a little bit of time. And we still have things that we need for the house that we're going to be shopping for. So yeah, we haven't had a lot of time on top of just working. And as she said, you know, getting ready for her to go back to work, just, we've been super busy. So in my spare time, I've been going back and playing old stuff. But yeah, that's what I've been doing. Speaking of stuff that is reminiscent of old stuff, let's talk about the Indie World Showcase, which took place on August 18th at 9 a.m. Pacific. That was 20 minutes of information regarding indie games coming to the Nintendo Switch. If you didn't watch, here's a little rundown, and then we'll get into some discussion. Supergiant Games, which were the creators of, I believe, Transistor, showed off a new game called Hades, which I don't know whether that had been shown before.
It was released on the Epic Games store, I believe.
Oh, okay.
It was an exclusive for a while, and I think that went to Steam, and now it's on the Switch. So,
okay. So cool.
It was in like an early access state, but I think it's the like final version is available for the Switch is what's going on with that. So
cool. So that is coming to Switch. Also coming to Switch, which I'll just talk about it now. Hypnospace Outlaw, which is one of my favorite games of this generation. I love what they did. If you don't know what Hypnospace Outlaw is, it is a game that was exclusive to PC up until, well, it's still exclusive to PC, but it's coming to consoles on August 27th. It is a 90s internet simulator, essentially, in which you play in a fictional world in which everyone, when they fall asleep at night, use this program called Hypnospace that is linked up to their computers. They kind of go into like this virtual reality world, and while they are sleeping, they're able to use these message boards, kind of like Yahoo GeoCities type things. And it's all really reminiscent of that old, you know, early MySpace and late Yahoo GeoCities camp and silliness of like embedding music and GIFs and random stuff into your page. And you play as a cop in this world, essentially enforcing the content laws, the various, like, you know, content infringement. You can't steal someone else's content without their permission. You can't post profane things. So you have to go through and report these violations, and you get HypnoCoin for doing this, which you can use to buy little like desktop buddies and like random programs and things that enhance your experience and things that you need to progress through the game. And there's a really interesting detective story that is going on in the background of the whole thing that is really compelling, really cool. I highly recommend anyone who has not played Hypnospace Outlaw, check this game out. It is coming to Nintendo Switch, PS4, and Xbox Game Pass on August 27th. And at that time, all versions, including the PC version, are getting the Hypnospace Plus expansion, which adds over 2 hours of brand new music. It adds like 60 new pages to the game. It adds a lot of new content, which I could not be happier about. Super cool game. Then on top of that, they talked about Spiritfarer, which I will say I don't really know very much about, but there's a dog and a cat and a girl, and it looks like an indie game. Sure does look like an indie game. Garden Story. I played that one. You've played Garden Story?
Yeah, I played it at PAX South.
Okay, so you want to tell us about it?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It reminds me a lot of, I don't know, like the exploratory stuff from Earthbound. There's like fishing in the game. There's you go around and you like pick up items and stuff and take it to other people. Sort of like a Link's Awakening kind of item exchange thing. There was like a dungeon that I went into. I guess there's this rot is the like the main antagonist is it's trying to corrupt like the garden, and you have to go out and defeat it and defeat like the main villains that are that like take over or trying to take over the happy garden. And there's lots of frogs and fun fruit and stuff like that that you can talk to, and there's like quests that you can do. There's like a message board that gives you quests, and it gives you an opportunity to sort of help out the villagers and stuff and sort of rebuild their town. But it was a lot of fun, and it's really cute, and it's got really good music and stuff that goes along with the style of the game.
Okay.
You play cool. as a grape.
Okay. Grape Ape?
No, I think in the trailer it said his name is Concord.
Yeah, okay. Concord the Grape. That's right. I forgot the name.
Okay. Does he fly?
Don't believe so.
Oh.
It's a grape.
It's not something he grapes do.
So on top of that, here, let me. On top of that, there was something that I'm sure a lot of people are excited about. Subnautica is coming to the Switch, which, as far as I understand, is essentially undersea Minecraft. I've never played it.
You don't really build anything. I mean, okay. You build structures, but it's not that kind of game. It's not like you can freely build everything. You're like building your bases and stuff like that, and you eventually can upgrade and get like underwater vehicles that let you go faster. And there's like huge ships that you can get that hold like your submarine and stuff. So there's upgrading and base construction, but it's not really the same as Minecraft to say that you have free reign of what you can build underwater.
Okay, so it's more survival than
it's very crafting. Yeah, it's very survival. There's a lot of like creepy creatures and stuff like that, and as you go further down, there's more dangerous things, and you lose your light, and so you have to have a vehicle that has a light on it. And it's okay. It was a lot of fun when I first played it years ago on the PC when it first came out. But it's really cool to see that they're putting it on the Switch, because I know a lot of people have been calling for it, and this is a lot of people's like daily driver game that they've just played this for hours every day. So it's cool to see that this finally coming to the Switch along with the expansion pack, which is Below Zero, and yes. I think that's new. I don't think that was available before. Oh, that's coming out in early next year. Which I think the other game is coming out early next year, if I recall correctly. Well, let's see. Yeah, both are coming out early next year. Which hopefully it's not too little too late, but I mean, for a game like that that has that kind of graphics, it does take a lot of development time. Make sure that it's working well and giving you decent frame rate. So I understand why they pushed it this long.
Yeah. Okay. So then some of these games, I don't know, like, just stop me if you feel like you have very strong opinions on any of these. Takeshi and Hiroshi.
My son's been playing that.
Really?
It was one of the games that he saw on the trailer or on the showcase, and he was like, I gotta have that game. And it's literally, you have like this older brother that's making an RPG for his younger brother.
Uh-huh.
And the big like takeaway from the game is that you have to keep him entertained. So you can't just give him like one enemy to face and just call it a day. You actually have to like ramp up the difficulty, otherwise he gets bored. And there's literally like a joy level menu on the top, so like a little bar that shows like how much fun he's having and stuff. I just think it's like a neat concept, and obviously my son was drawn to it, so it definitely appeals to kids. And he's 10, so I guess that showcases, you know, he really liked the idea of the game when he saw the trailer, so that was like the first one he wanted to pick up, and he's been playing that pretty much every day.
Huh. Wow, that's really cool. Huh.
Yeah, I thought it was a neat concept. I never seen anything like it before.
And apparently it was an Apple Arcade exclusive prior to coming to Switch.
Oh, that's right. It was on the iPad. That's right.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting.
Kudos to him for picking a game outside of the normal, you know.
Yeah.
Fortnite.
Yeah, well, he still plays with Splatoon. He was playing the Splatfest tonight, so that's pretty much his like daily game that he's playing, and he started Breath of the Wild over again and started playing through that. He's probably logged hundreds of hours into that game at this point. He definitely knows more about that game than I do. He's been glitching lately, so he goes on YouTube and watches like physics glitches and stuff, and then recreates them, and then runs out and shows them to me.
That's
like, look,
cool.
I can duplicate the Master Sword.
Wow.
I can go behind this wall and go wherever I want to. And here's how you get under the water, and you can then you can no longer swim. And like all these crazy like glitches and stuff. He doesn't do any speed running stuff. It's always glitches, but he has a lot of fun with that. So I'm glad he's able to be entertained by that kind of stuff.
You know, I wonder if speedrunning... And I know that you said he's not speedrunning yet, but I wonder if speedrunning is like that type of thing, like learning a language, where if you start super young, then like you're going to be way more proficient than someone who starts in like their 20s or, you know.
Well, it helps you look for exploits. Like,
yeah,
I'm sure it gives you the opportunity to sort of have that foresight to look and say, hey, can I fit myself here where I'm not supposed to go?
Well, I'm just curious if someone who's like grade school age, who is starting to learn speedrunning techniques, is going to end up being like one of the like world record holders one day because they started so early.
I guess I guess we won't know until that point, because it's this new generation that's sort of into that kind of stuff. So,
right. Okay, so Raji, an ancient epic.
I am excited about that one.
Oh, okay.
And I might actually pick it up and check it out, because I think that Hindu and Indian, more broadly Indian mythology, is really, like, I don't think it's used enough in gaming. I think Roman, Greek, and Norse are Roman and Greek. Like, they're not the same thing. I think that those three mythologies are relied on way more. And I think it's a real disservice, because Hindu and Indian mythology is really cool. Like,
it's really awesome. Yeah. It's
so badass that they have two gods of death that are married to each other. Like, that's it's a really cool mythology and really cool to explore. So I actually might be picking up that one just because I want to see what they do with the mythology in a video game. I want to see how they use it.
Neat. Well, the fact that it's going to be an exclusive, timed exclusive to Nintendo is kind of neat. That kind of speaks to how they feel about it.
Yeah.
See, Bear and Breakfast. We'll skip this one just because everyone's going to talk about it, I'm sure. We'll go back to it. Card Shark, which had one of the goofiest live action reveal things ever, with the man playing cards. I don't know that man's name, but he looked like he was trying to sell me something. That's all I'm saying.
But it does also look pretty neat, like, to a certain audience. I don't know. It definitely caught my attention, especially the idea of like that you're trying to learn to cheat in cards, and if you don't do it well enough, you run the risk of getting shot.
Yeah.
Because people don't like it when you cheat. And then the whole idea of, when I heard Card Shark, I was like, oh, so it's going to be like a 20s, 30s type theme, you know, something like that. Or maybe it's going to be like gangster theme. Nope.
18th century Europe.
Yep. 18th century France. get on your pantaloons. Like, I definitely think, I don't know if I'm going to play it, but it definitely looks pretty interesting. And I will probably at least look up a couple of Let's Plays once it's been out for a little while.
Both my sons scoffed at it. They were like, what is this dumb game? And they both love cards and card tricks and stuff too, so it was just like, I don't know, I think they were turned off by the graphics and stuff and just sort of like the setting, because they're used to like the futuristic and the colorful characters and stuff. So yeah, I just don't think it's like a kid's game, although, you know, there might be kids that want to learn how to cheat at cards. I don't know,
maybe that's the future generation. Kind of like one of those, it does feel kind of like a niche sort of game.
Yeah.
So then there was Torchlight 3.
I'm excited for that. I played both the first two games. And it's like a free-to-play game, as far as I could tell, on PC right now. So I'm guessing that's what it's going to be on the Switch. Because when I looked it up, it's like, play it now. But, oh no, it's not. Okay, well, maybe I'm mistaken. On Steam, it's $30. And yeah, I guess I don't know what free means anymore. Join early access now. Yeah, it's $30. Okay, so I don't know what I was thinking. I was reading something about it and I thought for some reason it was a free-to-play game, but it's not.
It's okay. But I don't think anyone knows what free means anymore in video games.
But no, it's they took the Diablo formula and perfected it for the most part. I mean, there's a lot of Diablo fans out there that would like,
so I'm not crazy. It looks a lot like Diablo.
It's a colorful Diablo game. Yes, absolutely. Minecraft sort of did that Minecraft Dungeons game that was sort of a rip off of Diablo, but they took the formula and they really perfected the feeling of getting loot and having your pet take it back to the city for you and stuff, so you can continue diving into the dungeon and fighting stuff. So they sort of streamline the whole thing, and there's no like goofy market from what I've seen, unless they added that. No, they don't have anything like that. And now this one, you can like make your own fort, and I don't think it has anything to do with Fortnite. You can make your own fort and you can like customize it or whatever. I don't know why that's something you would want to do, but yeah, the main gameplay loop for Torchlight has always been a lot of fun. And it's good for co-op play, too.
Okay.
Very colorful. Not a lot of demons, mostly just, like, little goblins and stuff like that. So it's good for kids, too.
A kid-friendly Diablo sounds appealing.
Yeah, I mean, it's rated T for teen, but it's just fantasy, you know, fantasy violence.
Sure, but I mean, yeah, but I mean, the Avengers movies are, a lot of them are PG-13, and kids can still enjoy 90% of those films. So, totally. Manifold Garden.
I have to stop you on that one.
Okay.
I know I'm doing that a lot on these, but I played Manifold Garden from beginning to end on Apple Arcade.
Okay.
And it is one of my favorite games of all time. It is, I don't really know how to describe it. It's it uses the Escher style, like, impossible geometry.
Yeah.
And everything has like this infinite aspect to it. So you can like fall forever, but you can also fall down to another platform below you. So you can look up and see a area you want to go to. And if you jump off a ledge, you can fall down to that platform that you couldn't get to before. Just to give you an idea just of some of the stuff that you can do with it. But you're messing with gravity, you're messing with time, you're messing with all this stuff. And it's like this fractal kind of world that's really beautiful and is really interesting to interact with. And the at the end of each level, like, it blows all the geometry out and sort of like brings it back together again in this sort of like fractal explosion. And yeah, I love it for the fact that they were able to pull that off, and I'm really excited to see it on the Switch. I mean, obviously, if it can run on iPad, it can run on the Switch, so Sure. I'm sure they'll do a decent job of porting it over, but yeah, no, it's definitely one of the most beautiful games I've ever seen, and I really enjoyed playing it because I'm a big fan of M.C. Escher.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, indie puzzle game with time-stopping or time-bending mechanics, that's just appealing to me just on its face, so that's really cool. I mean, you had me at puzzle game, but you add in, you know, like interesting mechanics, I'm there for it. So then let's see. Let's just skip to the big two, which was...
Can I say something about Evergate real quick?
Sure.
Okay. Evergate is sort of like Ori and the Blind Forest. I mean, it's sort of, you can see that just from the trailer of it. Ethan's been playing that one. He got that one as well. And he's been having a lot of fun with it, but it's one of those hard as nails, like platforming game, just like Ori was. And that's a bit, to me, that seems like what they were copying whenever they made the game, which isn't necessarily a bad thing because Ori is a great game, but it feels almost too similar. And that's, yeah. That is what it is. Were you going to talk about Grindstone? Can I say something about that too?
You can. I wasn't going to talk about Grindstone.
Okay, no. Grindstone is another one of my favorite like mobile games that I've ever played. It's a matching game with like all these creatures. They're all like different colors and stuff, and you can swipe past through them. And you can only go with the same color until you hit the grindstones, which lets you switch over colors. And so you could potentially, you have like this lumberjack dude that's like crazy. And he's like killing all these guys and they're turning into like jelly or whatever. But he gets progressively louder as you go through the entire screen. So if you do a combo that like takes out the entire screen, he's like screaming, and he's like getting louder and louder as he's crunching through all these enemies, and he gets faster and faster. It's just a really fun puzzle game. Like, I don't know. It is. This episode was brought to you by the letter C for Cerebral. It is cerebral in the violence that it provides. It's a lot of fun. If even just to play it for the sound effects in the game, I really enjoyed like how manic it is. But there's 200 plus levels. Oh my goodness. I never got that far. I got pretty far in the game on my iPad, but I never got anywhere close to that far. But it is a lot of fun. Very colorful, very violent.
Okay, cool.
Makes it for a good Nintendo game, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. Violence is Nintendo's middle name. Okay, so we're not going to talk about Untitled Goose Game. I'm sorry, but it's a two-player update. There's nothing to say.
It's two gooses! There's so much to say!
Okay, nice. Will, what...
Is that what geese?
What do you want to say about the two geese, Will?
There will be more to say, because now, for some reason... In my brain, I didn't care when it was one goose, but now that it's two geese and multiplayer, something in my brain has broken and says, I have to play that with Alex.
Oh, yeah, we're going to play
so
it.
So we will Absolutely. Have more to say on it. Like,
right.
Yeah, mischief with the friends. Like, that's the whole deal. Like,
this
of the game.
Small village thought that they were out of the woods with one goose, but no, now there's two geese. Is it two geese or be two gooses? We just talked about this. Yeah.
Just two wild and crazy guys.
I was gonna say if it's two guys, then you're talking about people.
Geese Howard.
Okay, yeah. Sorry, Alex. Continue.
No, it's okay. Will's game of the year, Untitled Goose Game.
By House.
By House. And then last but not least, I will just get ready for Brian to tell us about a short hike.
Well, I talked about it. I did talk about it already. This is how you like a little penguin and you sort of go around an island and there's a lot of puzzles and
okay, I just thought you would have I thought you would have more to say about it.
It's so beautiful, and it's so much fun to just sort of do your own thing. There's no real script to say, like, you have to go do this. You can literally just wander around and just appreciate the scenery. It's this forest with, like, waterfalls, and there's an ocean, and there's beaches, and you can glide around it as this penguin. You sort of have a limited ability to glide. Are you a penguin? You look like a penguin. Maybe you're not a penguin.
You look like a penguin.
I don't know what you are. Maybe you're just a regular old bird, but the dude looks like a penguin. I don't know what's going on.
I am a man, sir. With these birds. How dare you?
It doesn't say. I feel like that should be, like, important information.
How dare you call me a penguin?
I like the idea of it being a penguin that can glide, but only if it cannot swim.
That's what... It doesn't say. Like, why? Do I really have to go into the press kit to find this information out?
Yes. You have no choice.
It still doesn't tell me. Is this a freaking penguin, or what is this? What is this nonsense? But no, it feels a lot like Animal Crossing as a, like, an open exploration game. Because all the characters are, like, animals and stuff. And then all the writing is really funny. There's, like, fetch quests and stuff like that, but you pretty much just have, like, a general goal, and you can choose whether you want to go do that, or you can choose if you want to go help people out. And okay. You can soar through the sky as a maybe penguin bird. I don't know.
Do penguins have nipples?
Mm-mm. No, we're not going back to this.
So maybe in their pouches? I don't know. No, I don't know birds. About the anatomy of...
Penguin nipples. Saying. Anyway,
birds.
Our next topic. Oculus is requiring people to have Facebook accounts. Yes.
Everyone's unhappy about that.
So,
I need a Chelsea Ugg button over here. Yeah, so, it's just...
I also like that they announced it on Twitter.
Yeah, so the full... The
Even
full
they tweet, aren't fully on board with Facebook.
Right, so the full tweet thread states, "Today we're announcing some important updates to how people log into Oculus devices while still keeping their VR profile. Starting in October 2020, everyone using an Oculus device for the first time will need to log in with a Facebook account. If you're an existing user and you already have an Oculus account, you'll have the option to log in with Facebook and merge your Oculus and Facebook accounts. If you're an existing user and choose not to merge your accounts, you can continue to use your Oculus account for 2 years. After January 1st, 2023, we will end support for Oculus accounts. If you choose not to merge your accounts at that time, you can continue using your device, but full functionality will require a Facebook account. Giving people a single way to log into Oculus using their Facebook and password will make it easier to find, connect, and play with friends in VR."
I just don't think Facebook's going to be around that long. I mean, with all their controversy lately, people are dropping left and right from the platform. I think it's not future-proof. It's really ridiculous that they would go towards... there's a lot of people out there that are using it, but I don't feel that we're personally in the market for using Facebook anymore. Do you agree?
I agree. The one thing that I will say, you know, I'm not a big Facebook fan whatsoever, but the one thing that I think this could potentially do that would benefit Oculus and, you know, could potentially enhance the user experience is the idea that if everyone who is using an Oculus gets pushed over to Facebook, and on top of that, everyone who has a Facebook is heavily encouraged to get an Oculus, if they start promoting Oculus a lot more, just like randomly in the Facebook app and stuff like that, I'd be like, "Hey, did you know, you know, you could be using like Oculus to like have virtual meetings and stuff, and you could be like almost like you were in the same room as someone else as long as you have room scale VR set up and stuff like that." If they like try to integrate some of the social networking features of Facebook into Oculus and make it so like what we were doing right now with this podcast, make it so we were almost like we were all in the same room talking, like Discord, but with a video component. I think that would be pretty cool. And I could see Facebook trying to push for something like that in the distant future, maybe within the next few years. But other than that, like in terms of like a consumer move, like, yeah, I mean, I'm totally with everyone. Like, I don't like Facebook. I don't think a lot of people like Facebook. But in terms of like someone who's trying to push social media as far as it could possibly go, I think Facebook is desperately looking for a way to innovate and like, what is the next big thing in social media? And that could be it potentially.
They are. It's just, to me, the reason that I'm suspicious is that usually if Facebook wants something, a company, a service, whatever, they just buy it. And so since they're not, you know, outright purchasing the Oculus brand or whatever.
No, they own Oculus.
Oh, they do own Oculus?
Yeah, they already
own
Oculus.
Oh, okay, my bad then. Okay.
Yeah.
Then no, that's fine.
They are
one
of the
same. That all makes
sense
to me now.
Yeah. Yeah, but that was the thing, though, is when they purchased Oculus, like, one of the reasons why people are upset is because whatever that guy's name is,
Palmer Luckey
was out there like, no, guys, it's cool. We got purchased by Oculus, but we got purchased by Facebook. We'll never make you sign up for a Facebook account and everything. And people are like, oh, cool. Now you're doing literally the thing that you told me you weren't going to do. So screw you. I'm done with Oculus.
Yeah, but no one should be surprised by that. Like,
no,
the whole point of Facebook buying up things is to make people get Facebook accounts. Like,
yeah, I agree. So you should never trust anything that like these CEOs and like major companies tell you when they tell you you won't have to do something. Just like, you know, anything that Microsoft is telling you right now about, like, we're going to make Xbox One versions of all Xbox Series X games going forward of their first party stuff, so that you'll be able to play that. Like, don't believe that for a second. Like, they're going to reverse that. They're going to drop the Xbox One as hard as humanly possible the second the Series X hit shelves, just like they've done in the past. So, like, never, I would never believe anything that any major company, including Oculus, tells you ever.
Well, and with Facebook in particular, it just doesn't make any sense. They're already managing a bunch of accounts through Facebook. Like, they already have the infrastructure in there. Why would they spend money to continue to maintain the infrastructure for Oculus accounts when they can just link them and make them one? And that would also make it easier for them to do what actually makes them money, and that is selling your data.
For the same reason why Instagram and WhatsApp, for example, have some modicum of individuality, is that people just don't like Facebook. And yeah, Instagram and WhatsApp are owned by Facebook now, but like, they're trying hard not to brand themselves as Facebook products because they know the negative connotation attached to being a Facebook product.
Except at the same time, people have seriously disliked Facebook for like, what, 10 years now?
Yeah.
And it hasn't diminished how many people have accounts on there. It hasn't diminished, like, it hasn't even slowed down how much money they make. Like, it's,
sure, until just recently, maybe, because I've seen a lot of people deactivating their accounts mainly because of conspiracy theorists. But,
well, yeah, but I mean, no one can predict who's going to get struck by a conspiracy theory.
Yeah,
but like, you know, barring stuff like that, that is completely random and can't be predicted. Facebook can't even really be taken down by like our government, let alone, right, you know, a bad reputation. They've had a crap reputation for 10 years.
Sure.
I think at this point they purposefully skip, like, when they add new features and stuff and everyone's like, this isn't what we're asking for. We really didn't want this. This makes it more convoluted and confusing. I think they're doing that on purpose at this point, just to taunt everyone. Like,
right.
Facebook does not care that no one likes them because everyone still uses them.
Yeah, I can see
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I think as far as the whole thing, I do have one redeeming thing to say about it, is that I know for a fact that there's an underground like community that's working to sort of fix the problems that Facebook is introducing, and that you can take your, like, for example, the Oculus Quest that I have, I know that there's a lot of people out there that are revisioning the software, so you can do it without a Facebook account. And there's a couple other things that you can do that will alleviate that problem. But I think that what the biggest concern is for people is that if you don't sign up for the Facebook account, I mean, they said that you would have the ability to use the device, but not to its full capacity.
Right.
That I think you're going to lose access to the games that you purchased, I think is the biggest concern about what's going to go on. And the Oculus Quest is wide open for pirating software and stuff like that. So, and that's been going on since the thing pretty much came out. Within the first couple of months, they had figured out how to make the software basically free for the Oculus Quest. So I don't think that's going to be a concern. I just think that if you want to use it legit, and if you want to play online with other people, then that's going to be a problem. Same way that the Nintendo Switch like hacks and stuff work these days, and all the other hacks out there for the other consoles, it's like you really can't play online, but you can still play like everything else. But I think the biggest draw to VR is being able to play with other people. You know, like that kind of interactions. You're not going to know what to expect every game. Rec Room is a good example of that. I still don't understand why Rec Room is free, but it's basically a huge sports park. You play paintball. They have a iteration of like Castlevania in first person. There's a Wipeout style like obstacle course. There's Pictionary. There's like all kinds of stuff you can do with Rec Room, laser tag, dodgeball, just a bunch of stuff that you can do with other people in VR. That just the interaction makes it worth it. Whereas a single player experience, yes, it's going to be high production and it's going to be a lot of fun and you're going to be amazed by what they can do with it, but at the end of the day, you paid $30 to experience something for like maybe an hour, I think is the longest single player game I played for my Oculus Quest. Maybe a couple. I don't recall exactly, but most of the experiences that you're going to want to play are going to be multiplayer. And that's sort of, they're going to cut you off from that in a couple of years.
Sure, sure. Yeah, well, and that's always been my experience with any of this stuff. Too, with any hardware in general, is that really we don't see the full potential of the hardware until like modders and homebrew makers get their hands on it and figure out, like, obviously it breaks some of the stuff that requires you to just, you know, straight up be on, you know, Facebook servers or whatever, you know, in this case Facebook servers, but like, but may also alleviate some concerns that people had with the Oculus even prior to this move. So that's always cool. So yeah, that'll be interesting to see.
There's some additional functionality that you get from like going homebrew with the Oculus Quest, for example.
Sure.
There's a Virtual Boy emulator and it literally lets you play the Virtual Boy games, but you can change the color so it's not red and black, and you can pretty much load up any of the ROMs that you want to and change like the controls and stuff like that, put turbo buttons on, whatever you want to do. But the fact that they were able to do that with a platform like that, I think is really cool. And I think that that scene is going to exist no matter what. And basically Facebook sort of gave them the opportunity to do that because anybody can become a developer for the platform. And that's basically what you have to do, is you have to sign up as to be a developer to sideload that software onto your device. And once you've done that, I mean, then you can just program whatever you want to for the device. And that's sort of how it opened the box of everybody being able to take the commercial software and convert it to something that you could just sideload as well. But that sort of comes with every situation like that. Once people get the developer tools, then it's just a hop, skip, and a jump to the piracy.
Right,
from there. So
right. Will, what are your thoughts on this whole thing?
I think probably Telsey nailed it on the head of just like, why keep the, I guess, the format of the database for the Oculus account and just put it all under Facebook. I mean, maybe it's, they'll probably milk some information from it, but I don't really know how much they'll be able to get from that. And
I think they're probably not taking pictures of like what you're seeing in your headset.
Just a bunch.
Because it's got the outfacing cameras on the new devices, so they could literally be taking pictures of your room and stuff, and like see what you're interested in. Put sticky notes
on them or something.
Yeah.
So more so, I think that they would probably take what sort of games you play and throw that into their algorithm.
That's more realistic. Other
stuff that you like on Facebook. So if they're like, "Oh, we noticed that most people who play this game also seem to like this product," then they're going to start advertising that product to other people who play that game or that kind of game. That's what I was saying. It's just another way for them to mine, like to mine your data and then sell it, because that is how Facebook makes money, is selling your data.
Well, like, also they also had they had confirmed that they use the microphones while you're running Facebook in the background on your phones to serve up advertising data. So they will actually take stuff that you've said out loud and put advertisements on Facebook based on the information that you said out loud with the app. They data mined the software and reverse engineered it and found out that they were basically recording while you were not using the software itself. So I wouldn't put it past them to potentially scan what you're viewing with your outfacing cameras on your Oculus Quest, or any Oculus device. But yeah, I agree. Majority of what they're going to be serving content for is going to be what you're already playing or something that could easily have access to.
But we should ban TikTok.
And TikTaks.
And TikTaks.
Hey, I like TikTaks.
Yeah, so that is a situation that we will be monitoring in terms of the backlash that they are obviously receiving.
I know you went below Twitter, and the first two things were gifs of just people screaming no and boo.
Oh yeah, people are very upset. I mean, no one likes Facebook except for people above the age of 60 years old. Facebook is not good right now. But anyway, let's get to our last thing, which is kind of a fun thing. Brian submitted this week, which is a little question. Do you want to take it, Brian? You want to ask the question?
Sure. I guess I'll start with posing it to Will, actually. What is your favorite or most memorable game from your childhood?
Ooh, good question. I'm just gonna pick a, because there's probably like a ton of answers, right? How about Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2? No, I'm gonna say there was Jurassic Park The Lost World for PlayStation 1. It was one of those games we got when the console came out, and there was a cheat code you could put in where you basically just flew around with a machine gun, and I think that's the only way we ever took out the T-Rex.
That's awesome. That was very memorable. I didn't know that you could do that.
I have to find it, but it's not going to get a remaster. Let me just put it that way. But
yeah.
And what was this game called?
Lost World?
It was like the game that came out. Yeah, the accompanying game. You know, back when we would get a video game for every Blockbuster movie that came out.
Right, sure. Okay, cool.
It was just like a 3D. It was a 3D dinosaur game. Right, that you couldn't you play both sides, sort of like an Alien versus Predator thing?
Yeah, it was like it switched from 2D to 3D on occasions, but I mean it was like Crash Bandicoot 3D, where it, you know, it's,
and you had like the hunters also that you could play as, right? So you could play as the dinosaurs in some levels, and then you had the hunters that had to like kill the dinosaurs and.
Correct. Yeah, so that was kind of a cool little, right.
And so it was the last level. Those some old graphics, man. I'm watching a YouTube video right now. It's cracking me up. But no, it looks like it would be. Yeah, I mean, do you know how old you were like when you were playing it?
It was probably like 8 or 9. It couldn't have been older. Cool. I want to say, because when did Lost World come out? That was like 2000 or something, right? 99.
99. I think.
Yeah, so that'd be 8.
Oh wait, how would it release in 1997 if the movie came out 2 years later? I don't think that's right. Hold on a second. Yeah, when did Lost World Jurassic Park? Oh, it's 1997 film, yeah. So 1997 is when you were playing that. So that was like 8 or 9 for you?
Oh, I was like 6, yeah.
Oh, wow.
I was even younger.
Very cool.
What's your answer, Brian, to the question you posed?
So mine is one that I've definitely said multiple times that I'm a fan of. I'm pretty sure it's literally on the description on my big boss battle
Little profile. Nemo?
No, I mean, Little Nemo is certainly one that I enjoyed a lot, and I don't know if I would say it was that big of an inspiration in my childhood, but Chrono Trigger. I went on a RV trip with my family and my friend Nick May, which Alex, you've met, and I think Will, you might have met him too. Let me borrow his copy of Chrono Trigger because I didn't have it at the time. And so I took my Super Nintendo. There was a TV built into the RV, and I was playing Chrono Trigger the entire trip. And I got like multiple endings, and I was calling up Nintendo Power for like hints on some of the boss fights and stuff. And yeah, it was just so memorable because of that trip. And I remember specifically, I mean, Chrono Trigger is a game that you have to save at. So I would often have to redo parts because my grandfather was driving the RV and they would cut the power off whenever they'd park it. So I'd have to tell them, you know, hey, I need to save. Let's keep the RV on for a second. But there were some times that I didn't get to it fast enough and they just cut the power on me, like in the middle of a boss battle or whatever. But no, I mean, yeah, that was frustrating, but it was just such a memorable game for me because I got to play through it in its entirety and played it again and again while I was on that road trip. And I guess, I don't know, I think that was Chrono Trigger a 94 game?
95, I think.
1995. So it came out in 1995, and that was in... Yeah, I guess that was a universal release or worldwide release. And so 1995, that would be me being 12 years old. So right before I was a teenager, that was sort of like, I don't know. I a lot of people are like, you know, childhood, they think like under 10, but that was like the defining game for me. I mean, I was so big on the art style. I was literally drawing the characters and stuff. Like in notebooks, and I was like writing out the dialogue from some of my favorite characters, and I could like hum like all the themes, the musical themes from the game because I had played it so much. And yeah, it was just such a memorable game for me, and I love time travel stuff. So seeing that in a video game, after me loving like Back to the Future and stuff like that, seeing that in a video game that had this complex, like, medieval story relating to time travel for whatever reason really resonated with me really strongly. And, yeah, I enjoyed the heck out of that game.
Cool.
That's my answer.
Awesome.
Good answer.
Thanks.
Chels?
For me, it was Pokemon, specifically Gold and Blue. It was the first video game ever that I did not have to share with my siblings. My sisters and I each got our own Game Boy Color, and our own versions of Pokemon. And it was the first video game I had that was portable. And my parents, while I was growing up, lived in two different states. And so frequently throughout the year, I would be making these 8-hour trips to Tennessee or Florida. And so definitely Pokemon. I played and replayed and replayed and replayed those games so many times. I just had parts of it just, you know, it's not like it's a, you know, complicated game or anything, but I would change up my teams and I would do all sorts of different stuff. And I would try to beat it with lower levels without grinding as much. And sometimes I would grind as much as I possibly could from the beginning just to power trip and blow through everything.
Do you have a Nyko worm light for your Game Boy Color?
Yes.
Oh, man.
I also had the car charger for the little plug-in.
Oh, awesome. Too. Yeah. I love the accessories that they came out with the systems.
Yes. Yes. It's actually, I played it so much that it's one of the only times that my mom had to come in and physically remove something from my room at night. Because she wouldn't do it with books. I was a huge bookworm. She wouldn't take my books, but she didn't like me playing the video game, staying up to play that. And so she would come in and physically take it and put it in her like bedside table to make sure I didn't stay up.
You playing those video games?
Yeah, basically. but on trips, man, no holds barred. I was a loud, rambunctious, hyperactive kid. So you put that video game in my hand, let me hyperfixate on that for 8 hours. My mom was like, yes.
Awesome. Yeah.
And so I just played it so much in my brain. I started making up little personality, like more personalities for the NPCs that were in the game and that sort of stuff, just because my brain started to like build out, flesh out the world and the characters a little bit more to myself. So definitely Pokemon, hands down.
Cool. This is a hard one because I feel like my entire childhood was shaped by like a handful of really good video games, or like really iconic, memorable video games. So like it was Super Mario 64, it was Sonic Adventure 2, it was the Pokemon games, it was the original Animal Crossing on GameCube. And you know, it depends on what we talk about for the scope of childhood, because I'm still referring to, you know, like both elementary and middle school, but like in general, the Game Boy, the original Game Boy and the Nintendo GameCube, particularly the Nintendo GameCube, is just what got me so deep into the whole thing. But I guess if you want to talk about like what started it all, I guess a good standard answer would probably be Super Mario 64, which, you know, obviously I was playing that game a little bit on the last podcast. It's one of those games that I don't understand how it is held up that well. And, you know, maybe it's just like, maybe everyone has a game like this. Maybe it is like all of y'all describing the games that you have are games that you could go back today and beat really easily and enjoy. And maybe everyone has a game like that. So maybe it's just like a bias that everyone has a game like that. But Super Mario 64, I, in my completely biased opinion, feel like that is a game that has held up better than any game in history, period. Like, that is just the game. That is like what a video game should be. It is literally just, you hop out of a warp pipe, you're given very little story, and you just jump right into the world. And it's colorful. The music is just
literally,
like, Yeah. The music is booming. Like, the second you jump into Bob on Battlefield, it is just like this perfect music. It is, I feel like there will never be something as impactful as the jump that we had from 2D gaming into 3D gaming. And I feel like that is a moment that will always stick with me. And maybe virtual reality. Like the first time that I played like that Astrobot game with you, Brian, that was like a Super Mario 64 moment for me. But maybe it was just because of my age that I feel like I will never have that experience again.
It's hard to get that wonderment out of video games these days. But yeah, mm-hmm. I also felt the same way as Astrobot. I was like, holy crap. They summoned Mario 64 and put it in his little robot's body.
Sure. Sure, yeah. Like that's the thing is just being able to, if I could forget Super Mario 64 and replay, like, forget all video games and just replay Super Mario 64 again. Like, that is just like one of the most euphoric feelings I feel in all of video games, is experiencing Mario 64 for the first time. Especially if, you know, like, the only other thing that I had to compare it to was like 2D side scrollers and Pokemon. But then you jump into a full 3D world for the first time with, like I said, just like the best colors and music you could possibly imagine. And obviously, you know, things have improved since then, but for the time, it was revolutionary. And I don't think anything has stuck with me like Super Mario 64 did.
I think a really important thing is the way that they paid tribute to it in Super Mario Odyssey. I thought a really beautiful tribute to the original Super Mario 64, the fact that you could get the original Mario, the polygonal Mario character and his hat and everything. It played the music. It wasn't the original game, but it was really cool what they were able to do with that in Super Mario Odyssey as well. I think they did a really good job at paying tribute to it.
No, and they got it too. Like, they understood. Odyssey showed that they understood that people wanted another 64/Sunshine game because of all those infographics that were coming out when they announced it, of like, hey, you know, this is how we're designing this game. You know, Galaxy followed this path, and Super Mario 3D World, you know, followed this path. And we're going to go back to like this other path of like, you know, overworld with like little levels, like sub levels that you go in and you collect, you know, like stars or whatever type of item for that game. And that's, I mean, they designed Odyssey to be the next Super Mario 64, and it really showed. So, yeah.
Remember those diagrams?
I missed those diagrams. Those were. It gave me hope that game developers, Nintendo in particular, actually listens to us.
It sort of frustrated me when I beat the game. I was like, I'm never going to... It was the same thing with Mario 64. It's like, I'm never going to experience this again. I feel like I'm cheating myself to go back and play it through again.
Sure.
Because it's never going to feel as good as it did the first time I played through it.
Right. Well, what if they gave us another 3D Mario game before the Switch's life cycle was up? What if?
Super Mario 3D World Deluxe Edition.
Turbo.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I would hope that they would be able to pull off something like Galaxy 2, where they take the original engine and just give us some rehash of the original levels, and just expand the heck out of it like they did with Galaxy 2. And I think that fans would be happy with that. I mean, I don't think it would... I'm sure it took them a long time to develop what they did for Mario Odyssey, but at the same time, you already have the engine. You already have everything working. Just give us some new levels. I mean, they're big enough into DLC these days that they feel that they can hinge an entire mini-direct about it. So...
Right.
If they're willing to do that, why can't they do DLC for Mario Odyssey, or at the very least, you know, make a new world or new story that goes on top of it and just call it Super Mario Odyssey 2?
Yeah. Well, you know, Mario's 35th anniversary is next month, so we shall see if we get any...
I am not going to hold my breath for anything.
I won't either, but cross your fingers. Maybe by the time we get to episode 8 of the Mighty Mighty Boss Zones, we will have some really exciting things to look forward to. But we are unfortunately not there yet, ladies and gentlemen. This was only episode 5 of the Mighty Mighty Boss Zones. We really hope that you enjoyed this podcast. We really hope that you please share it with all your friends and you please talk about it. And if you can't watch it over and over and over, have someone else watch it over and over and over. And if they have someone else watch it over and over and over, even if they can't, then hey, eventually we'll have like 100 people watch this thing, and that's really all we need.
Human centipede reference or something.
This
what's going on here?
This is human resource machine, my friend.
Oh, okay. Isaac, coming, that reference.
Coming soon to the Nintendo Switch. Just kidding, it's already there. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much. As always, we have Chelsea Alberta.
Goodbye.
Ryan Taylor.
Ciao.
And Mr. Will Coleman.
Feliz Navidad.
We'll see you all next week. Bye.